The next case is Symveonics v. Secretary of the Navy, 2017-2536. Mr. Anderson, when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Lars Anderson, representing Symveonics, along with my colleague, Charlotte Rosen. We would, in order to understand my presentation, I would like to provide a copy of a couple provisions in the appendix that are...
Well, if they're in the record, we probably have them, and why don't you just refer to them?
Okay.
What pages?
Pages 80, section F1, which is page 81, and then section appendix A, which starts on page 271 and goes to 305. The issue before this court is whether the board's grant of summary judgment was appropriate as a matter of law. And that issue is reviewed de novo by the court. And the case also involves an interpretation of the contract between the Navy and Symveonics, which is also reviewable de novo by the court. I'd like to address, while our briefs address several issues of mistake of law, major errors of law, I would like to address two issues. The board's interpretation of the contract, which failed to give meaning to the contract as a whole, and the board improperly utilized extrinsic evidence and disputed issues of fact in support of its summary judgment motion.
You all seem to be sort of arguing past each other a little bit, or at least not arguing to the point that I think is most relevant here. I mean, there is, put aside whether a contract could be viewed ambiguous on its face, to be ambiguous on its face, where the parties enter into a contract with both understanding the other's interpretation of a term or a provision, and they both know what that interpretation is, both sides, and they enter in agreeing to that interpretation. Isn't that the end of the inquiry?
That is a major issue, Your Honor, in that the parties did not, the Navy did, or the Symveonics did not understand the Navy interpreted the contract to preclude any access to the trainer during a period of time. That is a disputed issue of fact.
But how do you get around the multiple admissions in which that's what Symveonics said they understood the Navy's interpretation to be?
Those multiple admissions, Your Honor, were, one was a Navy version of a conference call, which does not which was an internal memo, which was not reflected in Symveonics' version of that conference call, and moreover was disputed during all the deposition testimony by the Symveonics participants in that conference call. The other issue, a Navy person who attended a site visit 3 weeks before the solicitation was issued said that he gave a declaration saying that he emphatically said there'd be no access during this period of time. The Symveonics attendee of that site visit put in his deposition testimony and a declaration stated that the Navy person did not make that statement, that the Navy person only said that access would be restricted to four compartments, compartments 1, 2, 3, and 5.
Do I understand correctly that, in your view, you're saying that shows a genuine issue of material fact?
Absolutely.
In response, you've got Mr. Gustafson, who's an employee of Symveonics. He's saying something completely different.
That we dispute that. And we had listed...
You dispute that Mr. Gustafson said these things?
Yes.
You got emails?
Emails?
I'm sorry, his email which was directly after, right after this site visit, was only directed to Symbionics work during the PLC work, the controller work. And that's what he testified in his deposition and his declaration. The board said they did not believe his declaration and his deposition testimony because, in the board's opinion, Symbionics did not need to be at the trader doing any removal equipment. And that is a false assumption by the board. The statement of work required the Symbionics be at the site doing equipment replacement, surveys, and a great deal of work on site, and that was in the statement of work. And also, Symbionics' proposal indicated that it was planning to be on site doing removal and other work. So the judge just pulled this out of the air that Symbionics had no need to do any removal work and no need to be on site, and therefore he discounted the credibility of the Symbionics witness and the author of the email, who explained that email as not applying to the ESP doing the non-PLC work. Understand that this contract required primarily for 8 Navy trainers, it was replacement of the PLC, the control systems. And that work was going to be done by Symbionics. The one trainer at Great Lakes, who had been out of service for a number of years, required additional facilities type work, replacement of the piping and burners and other work, mechanical work, in addition to the control system. And that non-PLC work was going to be done by Symbionics subcontractor. In fact, one absolutely critical and non-disputed fact that was totally ignored by the board was that, one, there was nothing in writing anywhere, both before the solicitation, before the proposals, or anytime during the contract performance, that said Symbionics cannot have access during this interim period.
What about the emails between Symbionics and the sub, where they said, you know, how could you not know that?
That was after, that was when issues came up after the performance, and then Symbionics looked hard at the contract and said, there's nothing in the contract that says we have no access. But
are you referring to the Wednesday, October 14th email from Don Holman that said it was very clear that we, ESP, would be given access at certain dates, but at that point it would be turned over?
Yes.
Which are the HJA 4015? Is that the one you're referring to?
That was one of them. And then when that was reviewed by Symbionics, they said, well, wait a minute, the only restraint on access is in those four compartments, 1, 2, 3, and 5. What I'd like to refer...
But this is a Symbionics email. This is a,
Symbionics email.
Program manager.
Internal.
Who said it is clear from the RFP that you would not have access.
And his testimony in the depositions said that was his initial reaction when he was told by ESP that people at Great Lakes were saying there'd be no access. He looked at that, but then when they reviewed it carefully, and this came out in his deposition testimony, when they reviewed the contract carefully...
When was it that they reviewed the contract carefully?
Right after that came up, in October, before... That came up, I think, right the 5th of October, and then there was a presentation on the 20th and 21st at a program at the performance post-award conference, October 20th and 21st, and that's after, between October 5th and October 20th, contract was awarded September 25th. But in that post period,
so after the contract,
Symbionics carefully reviewed the contract with their subcontractor, and at the post-award conference on 20 and 21st, they took the position that the contract absolutely does not preclude our work.
But on October 15th, Mr. Gustafson responded to ESP's question and said, yeah, I recall them saying that when we went to the industry day, which occurred before the solicitation, before you put in the bid.
And Mr. Gustafson said that when they, in his testimony, his deposition, and his declaration, said that when he reviewed everything, he was convinced that the only statement precluding access was to those four compartments. But I'd like to use just a little bit of time on this critical, absolutely critical fact that the board overlooked, which was prior to the proposals in July of 2015, an offeror asked a question about access to the to a truck access to the facility, and could they use a particular loading dock?
This was a question that was asked by a party that was bidding but did not receive the contract.
Yes.
Okay.
Another offeror. But the official answer to that by the Navy stated that there was only restricted access, truck access, to one door in the facility after January 2016.
Where is that in the record?
That was that answer, which was given to all offerors, is at 3633. And we discussed this extensively in our reply brief at 2223. If the Navy's telling all the offerors that there's only one restriction, and that's to one loading dock, If the Navy had actually had this interpretation that there was a total restriction for this 4.5 month period, surely that would have been contained in that answer, rather than simply saying there's a restriction to one loading dock.
Counsel, you're into your rebuttal time. You can continue or save it as
Thank you.
Wish. Ms. Toplin.
May it please the Court. We respectfully request that you affirm the decision of the Board of Contract Appeals, finding that the government's decision to terminate Symbionics' contract for DePaul was justified because Symbionics anticipatorily repudiated the contract. The Navy had reasonable grounds to believe that Symbionics could not complete this contract on time, and they properly issued a cure notice. Symbionics made repeated statements that they could not complete this contract without access to the trainers during the interim period.
Well, you still have to address the threshold question of whether the access issue was a material alteration to the terms of the contract.
That would go to an excuse, Your Honors. That would be Symbionics' excuse for not being able to comply with the schedule and not be able to complete the contract on time, is that we had grounds to believe that they could not complete in context with our interpretation. Asked them for adequate assurances. They did not give them. Instead, they raised an excuse, which is said our interpretation of the contract is proper.
Right, but then that would change whether or not any termination would be for default
yes.
versus for convenience.
Yes, Your Honor, but they have the burden to prove that default is excusable, and they cannot. As this court was noting through them, through its discussion with Symbionics, is Symbionics clearly knew of the government's interpretation. Their counsel admitted it today. He admitted that the initial reading of that contract, they knew there was no access.
What about their argument that then later they looked at the contract, they analyzed it and said, hey, this isn't clear at all? And so how does that play into their arguing that there's a genuine issue of material fact that would preclude summary judgment? What's your response to that?
Well, my response to that is that would actually defeat their claim for an entirely different reason, in the sense that it would show that they did not have the interpretation of the contract at the time, the same interpretation of the contract at the time they bid. As your opposing counsel admitted, is that they interpreted the contract as meaning no access at the time they bid. Companies seeking to make a claim on a contract has to show that they have that interpretation that they're seeking to enforce at the time of their bid, and opposing counsel has admitted that Symbionics did not. So that
so
would certainly...
cases like the Blinderman construction case.
Edward Martin.
Which one?
Edward R. Martin.
That those cases are looking at the interpretation at the time of entering into
yes.
the contract.
Well, you have to,
it doesn't
yes.
matter if you've changed your interpretation
well,
later.
In order to enforce contra preferendum against the government, which is what Symbionics is trying to do, they have to show that they have the interpretation that they're seeking to enforce at the time they made their bid. And they're saying at the time they made their bid, they assumed there was no access. They went
but
back.
He said there's a material issue of fact on that question.
Well, with all due respect, he actually said that at the time, and their own admissions established that at the time they knew there was no access.
He's saying that they thought there was only no access for certain purposes or just no access to certain compartments, but not a complete no access for the purposes of their subcontractors' work.
Well, that their own statements established that they actually knew that there was no access based on their own statements.
Well, whether it does or doesn't, that doesn't change what their argument is, which is that it was a material dispute of fact.
We don't believe it's a material issue of fact, but even if it were, Your Honor, the law is clear of this federal circuit, this own court's precedent, that if an opposing contractor knew of an ambiguity and knew that the government was unaware of this potential alternative interpretation and failed to inquire and failed to put the government on notice, then they cannot seek to enforce that an alternative interpretation. So even assuming, which we would not concede is actually true, that there is no access, they certainly should have had knowledge of the government's alternative interpretation, and they cannot choose not to inquire, not to put the government on notice, knowing that the government was fully unaware of this alternative interpretation.
What is your response to the government's response to the contractor question on page 3633 of the appendix?
The Navy clearly answered the question that was presented. That question was purely dealing with access restrictions to the South Loading Dock. And they answered that question with regard to the South Loading Dock. They had, as I just indicated, the Navy had no notice of any other ambiguity, no notice of any other issue to think that there was any reason to go beyond it. They answered the question and addressed the question, which specifically asked for access restrictions to this one area, and they answered that question.
I guess it's a fair argument that the other side could say, wait, if we're talking about access restrictions, and why didn't you just say nobody's going to have access to any of this stuff?
Well, they could have
rather than say that particular loading dock.
I certainly cannot say I was not the one asking that, but they did answer the question that was asked. And if Symbionics had any question with regard to access restrictions or wanted to clarify anything after that fact, they certainly could have done it. Symbionics had the opportunity to clarify access restrictions. Just like this other offeror, they actually had two opportunities because there were two sets of questions and answers. After the first site visit, there were questions and answers. After that first Gustafson email where he said, we have 6 weeks and we have to be out, after knowing that there were hard milestones, after knowing that there was another contractor to coordinate around, they chose not to ask that question, and then they chose not to bid. The Navy then changed the evaluation criteria, reissued the solicitation, offered a second round of site visits, which Symbionics chose not to attend. They also chose not to have their subcontractor, ESP, attend. The Navy also then did a second set of questions and answers. And at no point in time did Symbionics ever seek clarification of this. So if Symbionics truly believed that it needed to be clarified whether there were additional access restrictions, they certainly had the opportunity and chose not to do so. As I said, a contractor who is aware of the fact that there's a potential issue in a contract, it's incumbent upon them, and if they're aware that the government is unaware of this potential alternative interpretation, has to inquire. They have the duty of inquiry, and the failure to do so.
Is it your position that the contract is ambiguous, or is it your position that the contract's unambiguous?
Our position is that the contract is ambiguous in the sense that it certainly leaves a gap, in the sense that it certainly does not, on its face, define what happens in that interim period. It certainly does not leaves that gap. It talks about a installation period, a removal period, and it leaves this third period in between. It certainly does not say work is permitted. It does not say work is. It does not say no work is permitted. It does not say you can share space. We would say that this is in and of itself creates the ambiguity. The issue here is that Symbionics knew
of that. So is that a patent ambiguity or a latent ambiguity?
Our position is that it certainly is patent because it's evident from its face that there's this gap. But even if it were not patent, the duty of inquiry can be imposed, as I noted, when the contractor knew or should have known of this potential ambiguity and chose not to exercise its duty of inquiry and chose not to put the government on notice, and that is the HPI case, Your Honor.
Did the board and the court below rely on this patent latent concept? I don't see them referring to that. I think they simply said that they knew what the Navy's position was, and that's the end of the inquiry. We don't want a Chenery problem here, in other words.
No, well, the board certainly made some conclusions and did, as we have conceded in our brief, certainly did weigh some facts, and we would certainly say once you start looking at extrinsic evidence to interpret this contract, which is not what we're trying to do here, you can certainly get to the point where it's clear that external facts that were known to Symbionics should have made it clear to them that their interpretation was unreasonable. But that would require a weighing of extrinsic evidence, and that's not what
so
we're
what
asking
is,
this court to do.
Obligation here if we think that the legal analysis done by the Board of Contract Appeals was not correct, that actually the legal analysis should have been different, and that they shouldn't have been weighing extrinsic evidence, do we have to send it back?
No, we do not, Your Honor.
Wow.
This contract interpretation is an issue to novo. That issue is squarely before this court, and this court is free to interpret that contract. If this court is to find that this contract, we know in our brief that this contract is patent ambiguous, is undisputed that Symbionics did not exercise the duty of inquiry, and for that reason, the motion can be affirmed. Likewise, even if the court weighed extrinsic evidence, considered extrinsic evidence, it's harmless because it's not necessary to sustain the decision. As we said, is that what the court looked at in terms of extrinsic evidence is said...
It is necessary to some extent if we conclude it's a latent ambiguity as opposed to patent ambiguity. Because you said if it's latent and they've been put on notice that the Navy has a different view, then they have to inquire.
If Symbionics knew that the Navy had a different view, which counsel has actually admitted that they did in their own emails for undisputed facts, admit that they knew that this contract originally imposed access restrictions, and according to their own executive vice president, they just assumed the government changed its mind. They knew that this contract had access restrictions, and if somebody knew or should have known of this alternative interpretation, that duty of inquiry should be imposed. And the undisputed...
You're talking about the HPI case, right?
Yes.
And the idea that the ambiguity should be treated as a patent ambiguity because Symbionics knew the government's argument.
Knew or should have known. Perry Wallace
knew the government's interpretation.
Yeah, knew or should, yes. And Perry Wallace had actual knowledge, or HPI took it one step further and said, should have known that the government had a different interpretation. And even.
Right, but again, he's arguing that there were material issues of fact about that question, whether they should have known that or whether they knew that.
Well, he's arguing that there are material issues of fact based on two statements, and what he ignores is all the other statements establishing, yes, those two statements might create issues of fact, but they're not material because there are other statements in the record establish that Symbionics clearly had that knowledge. Yes, as we conceded in our brief, there was this issue of whether it was said specifically in Industry Day, in the sense that Symbionics' own personnel did contradict the Navy's declaration that was said. But what is not contradicted is the fact that Symbionics' own repeated internal emails explicitly admit that they were aware of this. Their executive vice president testified that on reading of that contract and the initial reading, he assumed that there was no access. Then the solicitation came out, and he just assumed the government changed their mind and there was unfettered access. He never thought to inquire. Likewise, Symbionics' own personnel dealing and reading and interpreting that contract said there's only one interpretation of this contract. The only reasonable interpretation is no access. We don't know why ESP is assuming access because the face of the contract says it's either ambiguous and you'd have to inquire, or there's no access. Likewise, the contract language makes it clear that Symbionics' own interpretation begs questions that should have been inquired about. There was the extent that even assuming, which Symbionics is saying they, is not necessarily true, even assuming that they had this interpretation that they could share space from the reading of the get-go, that in and of itself is slightly inconsistent with the contract in the sense that the contract specifically talks about other instances of coordination but doesn't mention any instances of coordination. Likewise, to the extent that they wanted to coordinate in this sense, they would have needed an associate contractor clause. Yet an associate contractor clause wasn't specifically incorporated into that contract. So seeing these other instances in the solicitation should have raised these red flags to Symbionics that said, we need to inquire. We need to figure out whether or not our interpretation is shared by the government. Likewise, had they even assumed to, had they even taken the time to share their own statements and their own knowledge, which is undisputed, they certainly had knowledge that there was another contract that was getting priority. They certainly had knowledge of hard milestones. Yet that other contract, as I said, was actually publicly available at the time they submitted their bid.
That, isn't it true that, your substitute contractor couldn't meet the requirements because of the, without having access?
No, the substitute contractor could meet the requirements without having access. Likewise, the substitute subcontractor that Symbionics found after the termination for default and reaward had happened could also perform with no access. And that subcontractor, Symbionics, was actually aware of them at the time that they responded to the Navy's cure notice. They just chose not to divulge to the government. Had they divulged that alternative subcontractor, had they divulged the fact that they were actually in negotiations with an alternative subcontractor who could perform the contract off-site and on time, we certainly wouldn't necessarily be sitting here. We'd be in a very different position. But the substitute contractor confirmed to the contracting officer that they, when they submitted their bid, shared the government's interpretation of no access. Likewise, the substitute subcontractor that Symbionics was noted after the contract was reprocured that they were ready to work with also indicated that this contract could be performed off-site with no access, on time, and actually for less money. But Symbionics chose not to divulge that to the government until after the contract was reprocured. And had they done that sooner, we certainly would have been potentially sitting in a very different position here. But we're not, Your Honor. As I noted, we specifically had grounds to question Symbionics' performance based on the repeated statements that they couldn't perform on time. Nor did, in their response, their adequate request for adequate assurances that they indicate they could. And their, all of their attempts to show that the contract interpretation issue somehow justified their excuse are fruitless. There are no genuine issues of material fact here. They clearly breached their duty of inquiry. The contract was either patently ambiguous, and if this court doesn't think that ambiguity rises to the level of patency, then the duty of inquiry was still imposed based on either actual knowledge of the government's alternative interpretation and failure to inquire, or the fact that they should have had knowledge of the government's interpretation and failed to inquire. With that, I see my time is about to expire, and unless this court has any additional questions, we respectfully request that you affirm the decision below terminating Symbionics' contract for default for anticipatory repudiation.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Mr. Anderson has about 2 minutes for rebuttal if he needs it.
Yes, Your Honor. First, I'd like to correct a statement by the government. This contract did include the associated contractor clause. This was a task order under a master contract. The master contract had that clause, so it's automatically in the task order. This contract, the solicitation and this contract also said that there would be a partnership meeting with the NAVFAC contractor. And when this issue first came up at the performance at the post-award conference that the Navy saying, well, you don't have access during this period, the Navy said, well, we'll work this out at the partnership meeting with the NAVFAC contractor. In the subsequent phone calls on November 3rd, the Navy also repeated, in fact, they sent an invitation to Symbionics that we'll address this mutual access with the partnership meeting. That was also addressed at the November 3rd conference call, that this issue of mutual access can be addressed at this partnership meeting, which was then canceled, or at least subsequently, Symbionics was disinvited. But in the depositions of the contracting officer and all the Navy personnel, they all acknowledge that the contract does not contain any provision that specifically restricts the contractor's access to the trainer at any time. And those citations...
But doesn't that make it ambiguous as opposed to clear...
We don't think it's ambiguous at all, Your Honor, because when you read F1 with Appendix A, F1 says you must do certain work, you must do work in two periods, and Appendix A specifically defines the work to be done in those two periods and leaves the vast majority of work to be done at any time during the contract. So we don't think F1 was ambiguous at all. And the only, I'd like to give you the site, in appellate's brief, main brief at pages 12 and 34, we cite all the deposition testimony where the Navy acknowledged that there's nothing that says you can't have access. Also, Symbionics attendee at the site visit testified and submitted declarations, and that's in appendix 1733 to 1736, 1627 to 1632, and then 2165 to 2168, that his handwritten notes and the information that he got at the site visit was only there'd be restrictions to four specific compartments. The handout at the site visit, which is appendix, starts at appendix 858, and in that appendix at 872, 873, and 874, only the work, again, that was in appendix A, primarily for those four compartments, 1, 2, 3, and 5, those are the only things that are listed, and there is nothing in this handout that indicates there's a blanket restriction. Moreover...
Thank you, counsel. As you can see, your time has well expired. We'll take the case under advisement.
Okay.
The argument is over.
Thank you, Your Honor.